Hello and welcome to The Front Page, your essential weekly look at all the stories that matter in the world of horse racing. And this week, there's no shortage of stories to get stuck into. The Derby picture is fascinating. We've got flip-flopping favourites, we've got superpowers clashing at Epsom, and we've got questions about the very future of the Derby Festival. Then, in the bigger picture of racing's leadership, we have a sport in disarray. The incoming chair of the BHA announced last week that he was indefinitely delaying his start date. We ask, what does it mean for the sport and what happens from here? And then finally, we've got a new segment, 4 Big Stories in 4 Minutes. And to discuss all of that, I'm your host, Racing Post editor Tom Kerr, and I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by James Stevens. Welcome, James.
Cheers, Tom. Yep, plenty to go through.
Certainly is. And our Lambourne correspondent, Liam Head, is joining us as well. Welcome, Liam.
Thanks, Tom.
So, it's Derby week. We've got a new favourite. We've got international intrigue. We've got the powerhouse, superpowers of the sport clashing on Epsom Downs. Let's make sense of it all. James, first of all, flip-flopping fabs. Delacroix is into favourite. The Lion in Winter, the long-time favourite, drifted out to 12-1 briefly on Friday before coming back in, is now as short as 4-1 again. There is all sorts going on here. What should we make of it? Is the market overreacting to smoke signals from Ballydoyle, or is there more to it?
Well, I think the market is completely confused about what's going on. I mean, the Lion in Winter was this huge prospect at the start of the season, over favourite before the season. Then we saw the Guineas and Ruling Court, who had finished third behind him at York. Suddenly you're going, wow, this Lion of Winter must be the next big thing. Then Aidan O'Brien's winning all the trials, and you're going, oh, wow, here is the next big thing. The next one's going to run, and then he's beaten. And suddenly you're like, okay, now what? So it's been a very confusing picture. Then last week alone, he's 7-2, then he's 6-1, he's 12-1 at some point. You're just thinking, what on earth is going on? And this, of course, in a period of time where horses seem to drift and everyone's jumping on it, yeah, going, okay, well, this might not run. So, yeah, look, Delacroix is the obvious favourite now, probably going to be the ride of Ryan Moore. I think that was the key element in the week as well. Aidan O'Brien telling the Racing Post that Ryan Moore is probably going to ride Delacroix.
I think it's worse, because he'd find it difficult not to ride yes. Delacroix, which in the criminology of Ballydoyle was a pretty strong signal that this was a chosen one.
Yes, a chosen one. Yeah. He's got an excellent profile, doesn't he? He's been brilliant this season. And yeah, it's hard not to turn down that ride because he's looked like a proper middle distance horse.
Yeah. What about Ruling Court, though? So price-wise, did a Q&A at the weekend. Tom's really sweet on Ruling Court, thinks the price is up and wrong, albeit now into sort of second fav, so not quite as distant or far down as was the case. But is price-wise right? Is Ruling Court being overlooked, and is Ruling Court the obvious form horse in the race?
Well, I'm being very foolish in going against price-wise because I'm not sure he will stay as well as the others. I think he'll get the distance. Horse will always get the distance, but not as strongly as some of those proven middle distance horses and some of those with those pedigrees, which will definitely get it. So I'm happy to take him on. I do think he's the story of a race. It'll be 55 years this year since the last Triple Crown winner, Nijinsky, 1970. So it'd be amazing if that happens. And we've got a horse going into the latter stage of the season who's won the Guineas and the Derby. And of course, the fascinating thing about this is I feel we have this really strong group of three-year-olds. Field of Gold was sensational in the Irish 2000 Guineas, and it's just bubbling away with excitement for the last stage of the flat season. So he's the horse I'd like to see win from a narrative perspective, but I'm taking him on. I don't think he'll stay. And Pride of Arras, the other short one in the betting, definite contender, too short in the betting for what he's achieved. The one I'm siding with at a price is Stanhope Gardens. Now, I don't know if he's going to stay the distance as well, but he was just behind Delacroix as a two-year-old. He ran in a very poor race at Salisbury, free runners. It was not very good at all. But I just think he's overlooked for the art-winning trainer, Rafe Beckett. So, yeah, Stanhope Gardens each way for me.
Love it. In a year where we've got flip-flopping favourites and the market is so undecided, maybe this is a year for a each-way valued outsider to come and take it after a few years of shorties. Liam, over to you. What's your view? Where do you fancy for Epsom Glory?
I think, like James has been alluding to, Delacroix's the one that I've been sort of keen on for a number of weeks now. I think what he's done both times at Leopardstown has just been really impressive. Obviously, he's seems to be the choice mount of Ryan Moore, which is obviously swung it in the favour of him now being favourite and possibly will go off favourite on the day. But there is a lot of question marks on a number of them. You know, we touched on Ruling Court there about the distance. But I think based on what we've seen with Delacroix, I think he is the one, certainly from the Aidan O'Brien team, to beat. Having said that, obviously, we've seen what Aidan O'Brien can do in these big races. And more often than not, we can't really judge a lot of his horses after one run the season. We've seen the last few years, Auguste Rodin and City of Troy both disappointing in their first starts of the season. So, you know, the 6, 7, 8 to 1 that's available now for the line in winter is still a very decent price. I'd be very surprised if he went off that big in the market on the day. So, you know, it's a wide open race, and it's so great to see so many genuine contenders in the race. I must mention Lamborn for Aidan O'Brien, obviously a great name, certainly for my patch. Interestingly, he's obviously stayed the distance and certainly has a good each-way claim as well.
I love that your loyalty to Lamborn extends not just to horses trained in Lamborn, but also those named after it. That
and, he's wearing the colours as well, to be fair.
Fantastic. It's true commitment, yeah. Isn't it? One more contender we should talk about is Midak, who's set to be supplemented for the Aga Khan stud. This would be an incredibly poignant winner. Of course, the race is being run in honour of the late Aga Khan. And great to see France with a runner in the race. I think the first since 2016 for France. And the runner, Midak, won the same trial that Pour Moi won in 2011 before that famous victory with Mikel Barcelona standing up in the shadow of the post.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, it would be a moving story if Midak was to win this race after being supplemented. I believe he's due to do, you know, one more bit of work, I think today and Monday as we speak. So, and it's great to have, you know, these international horses coming over for this race. You know, it is the big race that everyone wants to be involved with. So to have international interest from afar would be great. I mean, Midak's obviously been ticking away really nicely in France. 3 from 3, obviously won that group 3, as you mentioned. And, you know, the race being run in memory of the Aga Khan, it would be a special moment for connections if he was going to win the race.
Certainly would. It's a real feel of the superpowers clashing at Epsom this year. We know obviously Ballydoyle and Godolphin have super strong squads. But let's also give a word to Wathnan, who have Damasus. Stayed on very strongly in the Dante. Got a chance?
Definitely has a chance, and it's that evolving Wathnan. We saw them come in quite big spending power in the early days, and now it's evolving that team to have horses that come through the next generations. When they first started, it was sort of going to that sale just for a while, Ascot, and splashing the cash, and suddenly these horses are winning. So this is more their sort of their long-term vision. And for all there's a lot to talk about pedigrees and people buying horses. It's good to see the big powerhouses wanting to breed and sort of excel in the middle distance races. It's been talked about way too often that there's an idea for speed and wanting quick horses and precocious two-year-olds, and actually having the biggest operations all vying for the biggest prize in the middle distance is great. We want to see more of it, but I'm not getting carried away because it's a trend that's been happening for way too long. But yeah, great to see them all clashing. And
Judmont there as well. Got a couple of Nightwalker and Pervy potentially going under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, I think Nightwalker will win the St. Ledger. So I think he's in the wrong race for now.
It can run in both.
It can run well in both. But he's probably too slow for me. But yeah, it looks a cracking race on paper. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. And let's a quick word for the Oaks. Comparatively, I'm going to say it's a boring race, and that might be controversial. But the market is very solid. We have a rock solid favourite in Desert Flower. Is it that simple, or is there more to it?
I'm fascinated by it because you've got Aidan O'Brien with all these great fillies who have proven over the distance, and William Buick on the best horse in the race, Desert Flower. And my word, he's going to have to sleep well on Thursday night because all of those Ballydoyle battalions who will all stay the distance, he's got a bit of a challenge on his hands looking forward to it. I think Desert Flower win, Gazelle is probably the second best in the race. So I'm a boring race for you, boring selections for me.
Liam, spice it up for the Oaks. What do you fancy?
Yeah, I'm really keen on Killing Queen for Ed Walker at a price. She's obviously proven over the distance. She answers the staying questions that some might not in the race. And Ed Walker's obviously flying, had a big race treble over the weekend at Haydock in York. And I just think, given the fact that we're unsure if the favourite will stay. Obviously, I know she was impressive in the Guineas last time, but you know, I just think this race is very open. There's a few sort of question marks on a few of them, but given the fact that Killing Queen has answered any questions regarding stamina and speed, I think she can go well at a very decent price.
Okay, one last thing before we move on from Epsom, James. It's 30 years since the race moved from a Wednesday to a Saturday. Lee Morrishead explored that in a really interesting article in Sunday's Racing Post, also available for Racing Post Plus subscribers. And it was really interesting. As someone who, I'm a late 30, so actually that move kind of took place before I was sort of deeply engrossed in the intricacies of the world of racing. And I've grown up with people sort of bemoaning the loss of that Wednesday race, and it made it special. But this really brought home that, you know, the race was actually struggling at the time. It was really had sort of dwindling relevance. The hill was empty. Audience for the race was declining. Certain similarities with today's situation. You know, I mean, I go to Epsom every year, and I've seen that the crowd on the hill dwindle to really, you know, pretty tiny groups of people compared to how it used to be. Does the race need another shake-up like it got 30 years ago?
I don't necessarily think the race needs a shake-up. I know exactly what you mean. I think that the famous pictures of the hill, I think they paint the picture, don't they? Yeah. You see it full and then it's not so full. And I would encourage anyone to read the article that you mentioned. I particularly enjoyed the line in the 1990s, but they thought, we need a celebrity to endorse the race. Let's get Tommy Steer, which I thought was quite interesting. That was my highlight.
Who's the 2025 version?
Oh, well, I presume they'd probably want Taylor Swift or someone like that, but whether she'd be endorsing it. Well, maybe we got Bobby Flay in the Oaks, so who knows?
Last year, Taylor Swift rumoured to go to Royal Ascot.
Of course.
She didn't go, but a rumour turned out to be almost as good in terms of driving attention. So.
To answer the question, I don't know if she will endorse the Derby, but who knows? I think there just needs to be more buzz about the Derby. I think you need a bigger, bigger, significant marketing campaign. Now, we're seeing the starts of a new era in Epsom. They've got a new general manager in there who's hoping to really evolve the race, and perhaps there's talk even of expanding the meeting. That's what I'd like to see. I mean, we've got 72-hour decks this year, which to me is a very small step towards a bigger thing. So I want to look at, compare it to what happens in the Kentucky Derby, which has, on the Saturday before, declarations, draw and a big party. Sunday and Monday, you've got horses work, public are invited to watch. That's actually something that Mooney Mullins has said should happen at Cheltenham. You've got racing on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, all of which with a different theme and a really endorsed theme. For example, on Tuesday was a whole day dedicated to Muhammad Ali. Fantastic, lots of people from boxing communities come. Nice. And there's media coverage every single day, a live stream of a horse is working. Now, it is different in America because horses have to travel in and they can't be based nearby, whereas a lot of the contenders here could still work at home and travel in on the day because of geographical differences. But the idea of really honing in and making it central place and inviting as much media coverage is there. And that's something that needs to be done to make the wider media more interested in the Derby. And the more that they tap onto it, the more it gets involved in public consciousness. And just to remind you as to what happened in the Derby last year, well, it was a draw down outside Powerline and Weatherspoons with a few table tennis balls, which is quite not the same as...
one of the all-time great draw ceremonies. And I mean that in a very ironic sense.
Yeah.
But it was glorious. But it was the people sort of wandering up, going just, like, oh, what's going on here? And then being like, ah, no, not interested.
Yeah.
Which was just really the hammer blow. But yeah, this year they've got in the FA Cup machine to do it. So they've upgraded from, you know, getting a felt tip pen and doing it on ping pong balls.
upgraded their technology, yeah.
Well, fantastic. Look, we will follow all of that on Wednesday when we get the early decks. And of course, all the build up to the Derby coming up on the Racing Post this week. We're going to move on now because last week was dominated in some respects by the saga of the will-he-won't-he reign of BHA chair Lord Charles Allen. Lord Allen was appointed to the role in November last year and was due to take up the role today on Monday, June the 2nd. However, last week we broke the news that last-minute discussions meant that there was some doubt over his start date, and the following day the BHA confirmed our story and said Lord Allen would be indefinitely delaying the start of his reign as BHA chair because he wanted to have more meetings with stakeholders to better inform his vision. This after 6 months of extensive meetings. So, James, what a shambles we have here. British Racing has no permanent chief executive, no permanent chair, and no clarity on when either of those positions will be filled. Who's to blame for this mess?
Well, I suppose you first have to look at the reason he was given the appointment. He's somebody who was new to racing to some sort of extent, and there were criticisms that he would need time to understand the sport before he can make such huge decisions with consequences, especially at a time where there's so many issues. There was criticism, including from Rafe Beckett, who said that we need somebody who's already sort of oven ready, I suppose would be the phrase, wouldn't it? Someone that can come in and already understands the sport. And the fact there was such a lengthy delay already was a concern. Now we're going to have even longer delay, perhaps we might have somebody new, we don't know. So all the key decisions in the sport will have to wait and are put on hold when they're at a time where they can't be put on hold. So in terms of blame, you've got to blame how that decision was made, not just the appointment on who it was, but also how it's been communicated with him to get to the last minute and decide it's not going to happen. To me, sounds like a communication breakdown, whether that's him not understanding what was happening, or indeed, possibly more likely, has been speculated that the governance strategy and the various different parties and how much of a say they have means he hasn't got the free rein that he'd possibly like to have on the sport. It's a huge sign, though, of the state of British racing. I mean, Liam is a Man United fan. I look at British Racing and Man United quite similarly because there's been a lot of good leaders in Man United. There's been a lot of good managers with a lot of experience, and it's failed for almost all of them. Now, that's not necessarily because they keep having bad leadership. It's probably a sign that there's something within that culture and within that wider mechanical system isn't working, I think is the state of play here.
I think that's absolutely right. And without wanting to bore our viewership completely, let's touch very quickly on governance. Governance basically being the way the sport is run, how decisions are made, who has power. And this has been a thorny issue for a long time. The structure was reformed in 2022, nominally giving the BHA board, which the chair will lead, the power to make decisions. But in reality, the race courses and participants still wield a huge amount of power. As you've alluded to, this delay, we understand, is about Lord Allen not being happy with the governance structure, wanting to bring about change and wanting to ensure that he, as the chair, is empowered to actually lead rather than just to try and drive consensus. But it all raises the question of, like, is racing structurally incapable of leading itself?
Well, I think the key thing for me on this is that this is a man who's got a huge experience, who's ready to give racing a fresh perspective. That was his quote when he came in. Now, he is someone who wants the opportunity to put his stamp on it, to govern, to lead, which is exactly what he should be doing. And I look at his career. I mean, he was advisor to Home Office during 2008 and 2010. It was a banking crisis. I mean, that's pretty stiff stuff. And he's looking at this job and saying, I'm not sure I can do this one, you know, which is pretty significant.
Yeah.
I think that the various groups in racing haven't quite fully accepted that they're going to have leadership from above. And that is possibly a sign that over the past few years, that governance and that leadership hasn't quite been good enough, so they don't have a trust in it. But if racing is going to succeed, it needs those parties to come together for the good of the sport and stop bickering and stop looking at your short-term self-interest and actually look at when you've got someone who's a figure, who's going to give a leadership as it should be done, with plenty of experience of leading similar businesses and all the challenges that they have, and just fully accept it. But at the minute, it just doesn't seem likely. Racing does seem, at the minute, incapable. And I think the wider issue is, this is a man who's got links with Labour. He was looked in, presumably, because of the election result, and that Labour may be in for one, possibly two terms, at the very least. And that he would have links and help government. How does it look if he walks away from this job as a Labour peer to when racing has to go, right, we need to sort out Levy? As a sport, it makes a sport look like a shambles. How can we be taken seriously if one of Labour-owned peers can't work in the sport or wasn't able to fulfill his duties. It's not a good look. It's a bad look for the sport, and it shows us a huge failure of trust from within and also how it looks on the outside.
And it's a point Lee Modisseth made in his column today. If Lord Allen walks away, who is going to come in and pick up this sport? Liam, I want to come to you here because this isn't just internal politics. This actually has real consequences for the sport. We're at a time where betting turnover in racing has fallen 19% in the last 3 years and continues to fall, where there's real pressure on crowds, where the costs for race courses and trainers and others in the sport continue to go up and up. This is really important. What is the mood in Lambourne where trainers are seeing the impact of those forces on their livelihoods?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's not just, like you said, although racing is a sport, it's the livelihood of many in Lambourne, like it is in the West Country for James's patch. I was speaking to Jamie Snowden about this the other day, and you know, looking from the outside, it obviously doesn't look well. The fact that Lord Allen was due to start, and he was due to start this week, and hasn't taken up the role, and nobody knows when. If he does take the role up, which is, it's just an alarming concern for those not in the sport, because it makes you wonder what the real issues are. There's a lot that needs to be decided for the sport going forward. You've mentioned in terms of the issues that we face, but I think that one of the concerns that I feel about this is the fact that if Lord Allen doesn't take this role, who's gonna sort of take a punt and come forward and take up the role when they know full well that the BHA's first choice has turned the role down after accepting it in the first place? So it doesn't look good, for the future. There's a number of issues that need to be sorted. So it's important that the next step is the correct one.
And what do you think about the Man United comparison?
I think James hit the nail on the head. I mean, if the BHA are like Manchester United, then it's going to be a long road until they get back to the top.
Indeed. We have to give a word as well to Jim Mullen, who did take over as the Jockey Club's chief executive today, and in fact has just appointed the interim chief executive, Charlie Boss, as the head of their racecourse division. The Jockey Club, first of all, will regard it as something of a minor success that they actually have a leader, because they, of course, they did try to appoint someone else, a high-ranking US racecourse executive who, by all accounts, leveraged that offer for a better deal at home. So the Jockey Club have had their troubles as well, but they've got their man, Jim Mullen, who's a former bookmaker, but most recently chief executive of publishing giant Reach. At which he was rather unpopular internally, chief executive, who was very popular with the shareholders because he managed to boost profits on declining turnover, mainly by cutting lots of jobs and working out how to be much more efficient. And he joined the Jockey Club, where the most recent financial results revealed a 37% slump in operating profits. We know Cheltenham is struggling. What might we expect from Jim, and how much should we read into his recent employment history?
I think it's hard to compare what he's done with Reach and what he will do at the Jockey Club. I think he was pretty ruthless cost cutter, wasn't he? That's the only way you can look at what's happened there. Whether that's required at the Jockey Club, I don't know. And what's required there is completely different. It's a huge different industry. It's worth touching on. He's got quite a bit of bookmaker experience. He's got almost quite a similar path to Nick Rust before he came into the BHA. And Nick Rust called him a smart cookie, which is a good endorsement, I suppose. He's got a huge challenge on his hands because the Jockey Club not only have to turn around a pretty miserable state of affairs at Cheltenham, where it's not been good. The crowds are down 60,000 in 3 years. It's challenging there, and there are some sprouts. There are some good signs. Guy Lavender, I've been impressed by him, and I think he'll do a good job at Cheltenham. Yep. That's obviously the key in the Jockey Club, but there are other elements. We've talked about the Derby. That's going to be it's keep being referred to as the problem child, which I find, which is quite an interesting presence. The Grand National is a huge event, has huge significance, and managing that and the various different angles and how that may change in time is an interesting one. So the fact he's got so much experience from bookmaking and links with racing, I think is a great thing. And I wish him the best of luck. You know, it's important the Jockey Club succeed. And the last point I'd make on that is that he's got two jobs, because he's not just the Jockey Club. He's also a huge voice in horse racing now and making decisions for a wider change within the sport. I mean, we know the Jockey Club were quite vocal about affordability checks. I hope he can take that mantle and continue to push that, because it's important from a wider perspective, not just for their funding, but indeed the sport. So, yeah, I'm glad that he's got a real good background within bookmaking and a knowledge of horse racing. And, yeah, wishing the best of luck. And as you say, I'm glad he's still in the job.
Yes, absolutely. I have to say, one thing that has been quite widely speculated is that he might sell or shut race courses. Jockey Club has 15 race courses. Only a handful of them are profitable. Basically, you've got Cheltenham, Aintree and Kempton with all those all-weather fixtures, which effectively prop up the rest of the of their 15 racecourse network. A lot of speculation that he might shut racecourses. How would you feel about that?
I've been in many press rooms and running racecourses. There is always speculations that racecourses are going to shut. I've heard almost all of them are going to shut at one point in their life. So, It could be an option. I mean, look, racecourses are very valuable land. A lot of those jockey club tracks are in big cities. They are worth a huge amount of money, but they mean a lot to different people. We saw when Kempton, I mean, Kempton's joked about, I mean, Kempton's always knocked, and Wednesday night fixtures aren't particularly good, and they're quite dry, and they're not great. Look at how much Kempton meant to people when they thought it was going to close. It was a huge significance. So if he is going to look down that line, and I've no inkling that he is, then he's going to realise how important racecourses are to different communities.
He certainly will. I think the problem with Kempton, similar to a lot of places, is that it's a fantastic place for one day a year. And it, you know, you can say something similar with Epsom. You know, Sandown has a handful of standout fixtures. You know, this is probably the case across our network. There's a lot of costs, a lot of tracks, but too few moments where they're really in the limelight. So yeah. Jim's got a big job to do, and as you say, we certainly wish him well. Finally, we're going to finish with a new segment, four big stories in 4 minutes-ish. We're going to start with the jumps classification, James, and what it told us about the shocking state of British jumps.
I have no idea about time management, so I'm just going to crack on. Yes, so jumps classifications, Anglo-Irish, this is where horses are assessed on their ratings, and we get an idea of where the best horses are, who they are, and the champions. We had equal champions this year, the two, the Gallop and the Champ, and Either the Way You're Thinking, joint champions. But more significantly was the sign of the times within British racing. Of horse races 150, there were 55 of them in Britain. That's down from 101 5 years ago. So a huge decline. 51 of those horses were trained by Willie Mullins. So he is almost as powerful as the whole of Britain, which is...
It's extraordinary,
but it's also not surprising.
Yeah. And we see it in the Cheltenham results,
We do see it in Cheltenham. Yeah. The falling amount of good quality jump horses is such a huge problem within jump racing, not just from a perspective of watching races, but it's attraction. We talk a lot about the attendances at Cheltenham. This is a huge part of it, because there are so few good horses to get excited about, and it's not just horses that are rated 150, it's improving novices and good bumper horses that are going to progress and sort of stars of the future. This is extremely worrying. It's another sign. I hope the tide is going to turn, but there isn't particularly much to jump on that it is. But yeah, a worrying time for British racing, another sign of it. And Willie Mullins, what a powerhouse he is.
Okay, James, second story. This was the most talked about story all week. It was the incident at Wexford where Philip Burns was unseated from Redwood Queen at the last flight. There was some interesting betting activity beforehand. The IHRB are now investigating, so there's not a lot we can say legally, but it's fair to say that the footage had everyone asking questions.
Yeah, it was fair to say that the various replays were uncomfortable viewing. It was unsure. It didn't potentially look as straightforward and unseat as you may expect. Unsurprisingly, social media has reacted very strongly. This is something which clearly has a huge impact. There will be an investigation. There's only so much, as you say, we can say. But look, you know, when a horse drifts like that, it's always going to capture attention. I mean, it was, as a punter, you've got enough challenges as it is with affordability checks and restrictions in there and that. When you see horses drifting and you've backed something and it doubled the price, it is always frustrating. So unsurprisingly, the reaction it's had, look forward to seeing what the investigation says, and we'll go from there, I suppose.
Absolutely. The main thing is the investigation is taking place. Let's hope it's thorough and gets to the nub of the matter. Let's go now over to Liam for the next two big stories. First of all, Kypros retires. What does it mean for the staying division?
Well, it's huge. It opens a gap for you know, anyone to take that sort of title that Kypros had. You know, an absolute superstar, staying superstar for Aidan O'Brien. You know, one of the all-time greats. Just truly fantastic the way that he's come back after time and time again, especially after a long break, you know, to win at the top level on a number of occasions. He will be very hard to be replaced for Aidan O'Brien, but, you know, an absolute superstar and one that racing will always remember.
And who now would you be putting your chips on to be the number one in the staying division? Troller Man, of course, laid down a claim for it early in the week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think Troller Man has been obviously fantastic, and it's interesting to see, you know, who sort of takes this sort of flag up from Kypros. Obviously, Stand Down was really impressive from John and Thady Gosden's star. So, you know, the manner of the way he won that race, I think he's only going to get better. I think William Buick said it after the race as well. So he's definitely someone that can sort of continue at the top division for a number of years to come.
And finally, Liam, Redcar was the latest race course to get a black mark for the state of its jockeys' facilities. This time, Tom Marquand highlighting that the exercise bike was in a utility room with an open gutter running through it. He said, is it too much to ask just for somewhere at least clean to be doing a bit of exercise? The track says they're working to resolve it. But it's a sad state of affairs where naming and shaming seems to be the only way to drive quick change.
Yeah, 100%. I just feel like we're sort of in this situation every week. It's a different topic, different story, different track. Obviously, Redcar came out and said that the bike that Tom was using was moved because he needed a bit of extra space. But again, it doesn't look good on the future of the sport if these professionals are having to sort of exercise before racing next to, you know, washing machines and so on. These are supposed to be the elite athletes in the sport, and it's very important that they have the best facilities available. So, I can understand why Tom obviously ventured his anger about the state of racing. You know, these jockeys travel up and down the country for one ride, maybe two or three, even more. So it's important that they get the sort of best care, you know, before, during and after racing. And hopefully, obviously, the more we see, you know, people speaking about these current state of affairs, then the quicker the powers above can react and make things better.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Liam. And thank you, James, as well, for all your contributions. And thank you at home for tuning in. This has been The Front Page. Stay tuned to The Racing Post all this week as we build up to Epsom. And we will see you again next week for more discussion of all the big stories. Until then, goodbye.